This is Drunk on Comics, episode 121, brought to you by InkWhiskey.com.
From Pulaskian, and I found out that Pulaskian is just a kind of a Grand Rapids thing. Like, I thought it was like a nationwide thing.
You're an idiot.
Why?
It was started here in Grand Rapids. Do you know the history behind Pulaski Days?
Yeah, because they've done 40 plus years of it.
Okay, and what is Pulaski Days actually about?
It started with two guys' birthdays that they wanted to celebrate.
And then they made up a fake holiday to celebrate General Pulaski and said, hey! And all the Polish halls went, hey!
Because we have a lot of Polish halls. But, like, I've
14.
Heard... Damn, you've been counting.
I'm not even, I don't know, there might be some Polish someplace. I mean, I know I've had a Polish dog in me before. So, anyway, we got a lot to cover today.
Yes, this is Drunk on Comics, which I'm still kind of drunk.
But not on comics.
No, drunk on other stuff. But we have comics.
I'm working my way back to being drunk. Oh, collecting tip.
Okay.
Oh, by the way, I'm Derek.
I'm Tony.
Matt is off doing family stuff because, as we announced at Grand Con, he and his wife had a baby not too long ago, and so they're busy there. And Kevin and his wife just had their baby this week, so he's off doing baby stuff. So Tony, when are you having yours? I just look like I'm pregnant, but I'm not. okay, so...
Yeah, collecting tip for you.
Collecting tip, yeah.
Because that sucks.
Yeah. Okay. When drinking beer while reading your comics is completely acceptable. Drinking beer while reading comics and having a very large happy dog that loves attention around you, not so acceptable, because when you're trying to reach for your beer and the dog comes and goes, "Hey, pet me," it knocks over your beer and spills all over your damn comics.
Yeah, you have quite a few ruined ones.
Yeah. Well, like one that, yeah, it was kind of, actually two that were like, you know, a couple drops on them. One that was, it's not good, and one that looks like I left it outside in the rain.
So here's the equation. Beer and comics, okay. Beer and dog, okay. Dog and comics, okay. But not all three together.
Right, yeah. Yeah, it's just, God, and I felt so bad because that, you know, the dog didn't know. You know, she was just having fun. She wanted to come get some attention. But anyway, so yeah, collecting tips. There you go. We haven't done one of those in a long time.
This was one that we actually came up with.
Unfortunately. Yeah, learn by mistake. That or sit at a taller table where, you know, the dog's not going to be a problem. But should we just get things kicked off with off the shelf?
Yes.
All right. I've actually got a couple books.
Really? Okay, then you can do one, and then I'll do one. And...
okay. Let's talk about the book that everybody's talking about.
Which is?
Thor.
Yes, they are talking about. We were kind of talking about it before.
Yeah.
And
I told you.
You cut me off.
Yeah. This is Thor number one, volume 84, I think. I don't know how many Thor number ones there have been now. But
so how Thor is he?
It's how Thor is she. Mm. Oh, what? Yeah. And... This book is written by Jason Aaron. Russell Dauterman did the art, and Matthew Wilson did the colors. And VC's Joe Sabino did letters on this one. I got the variant Fiona Staples cover because I just love Fiona Staples' work, and it was only a couple dollars more than cover price, so I was like, that's worth it to me. So, Tony, here's where you're going to maybe be able to give me a little bit of help. Apparently, Thor was in a fight on the moon with the Avengers, and Nick Fury was a dick and whispered something, and now Thor can't lift Mjolnir.
Yeah, that happened all in Original Sin.
Like, okay.
It's kind of disappointing that me and Matt never really got to wrap up our thought of a segment of talking about events, but that kind of happened and went by the wayside. But yeah, in this fight, Nick Fury is like just kicking everyone's ass.
Is he bad now or something?
It's what he was doing. So I guess we can kind of go back to Original Sin a bit. What you find out is...
Seasonal bruise.
Nick Fury was kind of like the Watcher on Earth. Not where the Watcher just watches shit. Nick Fury was the one that took action. There's been many times of people that want to come and invade Earth or come from different dimensions. And a long time ago, back in, you know, World War II, when he was part of the Howling Commandos and all that, he was shown this, the wall.
But this isn't the same Nick Fury that was part of the Howling Commandos.
Yeah, he's had the super soldier serum. That's why he's lived so long. That's why he's been kind of more enhanced than thing. But not the same one that Captain America has.
Wait, but how is... Okay, so wait, was this real Nick Fury or is this Sam Jackson Nick Fury?
This is real Nick Fury.
Okay.
So he's always had that. They've kind of more explained why he's been around for forever with just saying super soldier serum.
Okay.
However, his was failing, and he's actually old man Nick Fury now, where everyone has seen him as the young guy. Those mm-hmm. have all been life model decoys. And he's had life model decoys going all over the place to take care of normal human stuff while he's been saving the world from actually shit happening. And in this whole Original Sin, that's the secret gets out. There always needs to be that assassin person, that person that is doing stuff beyond what the Avengers can do. Because the Avengers, they fight, but they don't necessarily kill invaders. Nick Fury was like, this is what I'm going to be doing. So to quick sum up how Original Sin ended, you see that Nick Fury is now kind of the Watcher. The Watcher's dead, so you'll be happy about that.
Did he shove like one of the Watcher's eyeballs in his empty hole, his empty socket?
Kind of, and that's how it kind of ended, actually. The orb, the eyeball-looking guy, has one of the eyes still, and he sees things, and that's... I don't even know what the fuck's going on with that thing. But Nick Fury kind of all of a sudden got the power of the Watcher. He's on the moon, he's shackled there, and he's now called, like, the Endless One or something. So Nick Fury is still alive, even though comic book people think he's dead.
They should just call him the Furious.
That'd actually be a badass name. Bucky is now the new other person. I don't even know what he called himself, his title, but Bucky now is, like, saving the realm from all these invaders.
So Bucky is now the new Nick Fury?
Kind of. I mean, not being Nick Fury, but being that person that...
They could call him the Furious.
That would be cool.
Yeah.
Instead of the Winter Soldier.
Everybody's going to be the Furious.
The Furious Storm. But in the battle, when Nick was, like, to fuck Iron Man, he kind of says...
Who's going to fuck Iron Man?
Nick Fury was. No, he pretty much like bashed Captain America away. He told Iron Man, he goes, protocol 5-9 or 6-7, whatever. And
did I hear a niner in there?
Yes. And Tony Stark goes, how the fuck do you know that protocol? And Iron Man's armor went straight back to home. Like, Nick knew how to defeat every single Avenger. And he goes, and Thor then comes and starts kicking his ass. And Nick goes, what is the saddest thing is that it wasn't a fist that brought you down, but merely a whisper. And he whispered something into Thor's ear, and all of a sudden,
he couldn't,
he's holding the hammer, and he fucking falls straight down to the moon. And he's trying to pull up the hammer, and he just can't. And always wondering, what the hell did he whisper? What did he say? And so he's been pretty much kind of like, why the fuck can't I lift this hammer?
Well,
so getting back to
10
minutes ago when you asked what the hell happened...
Yeah, it was only like 5. Okay, so this book picks up with him on the moon still trying to pick up Mjolnir. Now, I have another question for you, because I have in my hands the real Mjolnir, which I can pick up because, you know, I'm Thor. But no, like, so you got this Marvel prop, and I'm assuming this was officially licensed.
Yep.
And it has the words on it, says whoever holds this hammer, if he be worthy, shall possess the power of Thor. Now, the way that it reads is I'm holding the handle with the hammer end up, and you can read it. In the comic, if you notice, the words are upside down on the hammer. That was just something I was curious about.
That's probably just, yeah, that's dumb because...
I want to go back and look and see how it actually is.
It should be when you're holding it up, you can read it, not when it's upside down.
Well, I mean, it would definitely, like, obviously, if you can't read it upside down, you're definitely not worthy.
Maybe they're magic runes that automatically...
Ooh, yeah. So Thor's here on the moon. He's got everybody there with him. And basically what Jason Aaron does is he's kind of sets this up for people like me that said, okay, I'm going to jump on the bandwagon, chick Thor, you know, we'll see what all the hype's about. And he sets it up where everybody's there. They fill in what's gone on. Apparently Odin left and Freya became the All-Mother. Asgard is now Asgardia.
Mm-hmm.
And Odin comes back and he tries to take over and Freya's like, yeah, fuck off. This is my place now. And, so the whole thing in here is just that there has to be a Thor. There's always been a Thor.
But he is Thor.
Well.
I mean, that's his name.
Yeah, but then again, there's more than one Tony.
There's only one me.
Yeah, but.
Thank God.
who has the real power of Tony? So, anyway, side note in this, and spoiler here. Frost giants are attacking Earth now because they know that Thor is useless. Thor finally leaves the moon, goes and gets his big axe, goes down to try and fight, and Malekith is down there. Malekith fucking cuts off Thor's arm.
Holy shit, that happens in this?
Yeah.
Because as my brother was wondering in the Avengers title, you can see Thor with his axe, Jarnborn, I believe it's called. Something weird, not easy to pronounce. Bjornborg? Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. I think it's Bjornborg.
But he's also got what looks like the Destroyer's armor hand, like a metal hand. And so we've been wondering, so if he gets a metal, you know, Luke Skywalker hand, when does that occur? That's kind of cool to find out that it happens in here.
Yeah, I think it's actually, well, here you can actually see his arm floating.
Oh.
And I don't know a lot about Malekith. And so, like, what Jason Aaron did with this character was a very cool way of introducing someone like me to this character because he's a dick.
Yep.
And it was quite fun because he's taunting Thor the entire time that he's fighting him, like just taunting him. And one of the best lines I've read in a book in a while to set this up while he's taunting him going, I can't figure out what's missing. There's something different about you. What is, oh, you're missing that little hammer of yours thing. But, and I'm going to read right from the book. He goes, but look at the bright side, Thor. Without that big, heavy Mjolnir to lug about all the time, you've no more need for so many cumbersome arms.
Oh.
And I'm like, that's some great fucking dialogue. You know, that is great dialogue because you've got this character that's just taunting, who clearly has the upper hand. Oh. You like that one?
Yeah.
So it just kind of sets it up. Now, at the end of the issue,
female... I feel like I need to give you a round of applause for that one. Too bad Thor can't do that.
No, he can't. That's one hand clapping.
I'm sure that's not what that sounds like.
I know. I think we've done that on the show before, and it sounds terrible. So at the end, you see the female Thor comes and picks it up.
Where is she from? Who is she?
They don't say. Which kind of pisses me off a little bit.
Earth person?
No. Now.
Asgardian?
My thought? It's Freya. It's his mother. That's my thought.
Okay. But, well, she's already got power.
But she's the one throughout this whole story that Aaron has saying, there has to be a Thor, there's always been a Thor kind of thing. You know, blah, blah, blah. She's the one that's taking control. And I think with that power grab that's going on between Odin and her, I think this makes sense. Now, I could be completely wrong, but if it's not her, there's no one else in this issue that it alludes to who it could be. So, I don't know. Next issue is called The Goddess of Thunder in Action. Now, what I liked about this was that this was a really good book to kind of set up how things happened, where things are going. What I didn't care for as much is I want to know who this person is.
Well, that's what they always do to hook you. They'll be like, "But we're going to show you who it is, last page."
Yeah, but every single cover that they had has this new Thor.
Oh, her picture on it?
Yeah. And it shows her in action of doing something or another. She shows up on the last page. I'm like, that is fucking bullshit, false advertising.
I just now remembered worst cover ever. I'm just going to throw it in there because we're talking about kind of covers. It was the new Captain America one.
Oh.
With the silhouette saying, who's the new Captain America?
And everybody knows. How do
you fuck not know who that is? Like, why did you have that cover? Because
it's been in the news. Like, I mean, it's been in USA Today.
Yeah. Like.
Yeah.
We know who it is. Like,
you want to know why I'll disagree, though, that that's the worst cover ever?
Why?
Because you can color your own picture in it. It's just an empty white spot. Bust out your crayons, and then when you're done, let your dog spill beer all over it, and it won't matter anyway. So, no, now I do have to say the artwork by Russell Dauterman in here was really, really nice. I don't know, like, it was just overall, it was very well done. In here, there's a lot of, like, splash pages with interior panels in it, which I liked. It's a trick that isn't used as often as it was for a while, and I think it's because, A, it was overdone, and B, people really didn't know how to properly do it, but Dauterman does a fantastic job with this. The colors by Matthew Wilson, I think, really set it off, but overall, it was a really, really nice layout. He does a really good job, especially with a huge cast of characters in here. This had to take a while to draw. You know, and so I was impressed, but like some of the color works by Wilson, where you have Odin like smashing stuff and things are exploding, you know, cause he's throwing a little, temper tantrum, really brought the artwork to life. So overall, I mean, just really nice job on it. Definitely worth a read. Is it a perfect book? No. Is it worth picking up? Absolutely. So, that was my first one.
Okay. I picked up a book that was actually, like, worth the cover price because it's a pretty thick book. It's about 40 pages, and it's The Green Lantern, New Gods, Godhead, Act 1, Part 1, Genesis. That's the whole working title. And not only is that long, but everyone that's been working on this, I'm going to run through the gamut of names.
Okay, wait. I'm just guessing, though, that everyone that worked on this got to choose part of a title.
Pretty much so.
Okay.
Or just a letter, and they threw it on a Scrabble board, and it came
there
out.
There you go.
Van Jensen, Justin Jordan, Robert Vendetti, Charles Soule, and Cullen Bunn, story. Ethan Van Sciver, Martin Coccolo, Goran Sadzuka, Chris Cross, and Pete Woods, art. Holy shit, they only have one colorist, Marcello Maiello.
Did you say crisscross?
Yes.
Like Mac Daddy make you jump. Daddy Mac will make you jump. Is it with K's or is it with a C-H?
No, it's just, C's. C's.
Oh, okay.
So there's a lot of people that worked on this book, but obviously this is going to be a new big event for DC. And I haven't read Green Lantern in a while. It was always one of those books that I enjoyed because, as you know me, I like Guardians of the Galaxy. I like more space-faring adventures.
You like galactic shit.
Yeah. And that's kind of Green Lantern's always been that way, or all the other Lantern books, for that matter. So I was kind of lost in what's happened. I wish Kevin was here, because I believe he's read some of it to give me an update on where things have gone in the Lantern world. But what seems to be is there... I do remember they were fighting some guy named Relic who was trying to take the rings or whatever, and I guess that was about a year ago when all those fucking evil books came out and I bought.
Was that
all
the Third Army?
No, that was 2 years ago.
Oh.
That was the first Lantern.
Oh, what was...
And Relic was the newest one for the Forever Evil.
Forever Evil. Yeah, I kept wanting to say Legion of Evil. That was wrong.
And the White Ranger, I mean, White Lantern, Kyle Rayner, who... He became the White... I'm just going to say Ranger all the time. He became that in a while ago during... was it Blackest Night?
Darkest Night?
Yeah. during that whole, and that was like, that's when I first started
reading. Was it Darkest Night? No, it was Blackest Night.
Yeah, that's what I said.
Nah, don't look to me to answer DC questions, dude. Come on, you know better than that.
And that's when he found the power of the White Ring. And through that, he's been kind of like he's got all the spectrums of the colors of the rainbow that each of the different seven cores have. So I kind of got that going to enough to kind of realize what's going on, but now he's dead. And I,
oh, Kylo Ren's dead?
I found that out in this book, because like I said, it's been
spoiler.
A little bit.
Spoiler.
I know. Anyone that's read this, though, because Hal Jordan goes and visits his grave. So that's, and they're like, I can't believe it's been a year since Relic or whatever. So that's kind of like filling in the gaps for me. I don't know anything about these new gods, though. And that's the part where Multiversity kind of introduced me a little bit to the new gods. All I know is that Darkseid is the evil Thanos of this world. And when he comes to town, it's a big thing. And in this whole new DC 52 universe, whatever they've done, I guess Darkseid hasn't been there yet. And they've been...
Well, there's that whole Darkseid, event that's coming up.
Yeah, well, that's what I think. This is part of tying into that as well, because these new gods have been saying ever since the beginning they were created, you know, blah blah blah, this and that. But then one person who was about destruction, and they banished him out of this universe, and he's always been coming back. So they are on the fight to prevent that from happening. They've been just over the eons training for this big battle. And they know that it's coming at some point. And this is the thing that I hate about DC, is just being a little creative. I know back in the day there was a guy named the Monitor, who I think was their watcher, I'm not sure. And then they had the Anti-Monitor, who was the bad guy person. Like,
Wait, so the Anti-Monitor just wouldn't know what was going on at all? You'd just be like, well, I didn't know.
Not understanding that. In this, these new gods are talking about the
Sorry, I'm just thinking about how awesome you could make that character, you know, with the Anti-Monitor walking up. Hey, Tony, how's your mom? She died. Oh, I didn't know. that's his whole bit. Hey, how's the new job going? I got fired. Oh, sorry, I didn't know. Just, yeah. Hey, how's your health? I have cancer. Oops. I mean, just like that would be an awesome character.
I got you a comb. I'm going through chemo.
Yeah, I mean, just, oh, that'd be great. Yeah. Okay.
I hope he shows up in one of these books, because I'm going to read that book just to try to understand a little bit more of
the Anti-Monitor. Wow.
So going in those lines, they're looking for the life equation, the one thing that can, you know, kill or whatever, defeat Darkseid. And he's looking for the anti-life equation. And I'm like, that's all you could come up with? You couldn't death seed or death ray or something death?
Isn't
anti-life?
Like a gun? Yeah.
The anti-life equation. So that's the one thing that I have against this book is that. That one phrasing of...
DC, yeah, but you know, I'll give DC credit, though. They've always had really silly names for things that they somehow make work. But yeah, I mean, like, at least they aren't giving up on it.
True. they're just running with it. Like,
just like, yep. Oh, there it is.
Well, one other thing that they did say, that he's looking for not only the anti-life, like, it's the ultimate nullifier. And I'm like, I know Marvel has that. Are they going to break over into their universe to steal it? Cause
yeah,
the Watcher had it at some point. Anyways, getting back to kind of how this book is unfolding, I can see why it took this many people to come up with a story. It's fucking intense in learning what these people are trying to do. When they learn that someone broke through this wall, there's like a wall that encompasses all universes, and the new gods can go through all the different 52 universes that they have, but ultimately there is an end boundary to all encompassing everything. It's the source wall, it's whatever. They believe that the ultimate life equation is on the other side, and they realize something broke through, and that's where they're realizing someone that had the seven rings, being Kyle Rayner, and that's where you kind of found out that Relic got, I guess, banished in this thing. Totally doesn't matter to this story, but these new gods are like, oh, so if we have these seven rings, we can have this white power, and that's the life equation. So they're going to go out and steal some rings. How godly these people are, the ring wielders don't stand a chance. Like, they went to the Sinestro corpse and just cut off Kilrog's hand and stole his ring. They just swiped rings off of everyone. Some of them even gave it willingly after they said, you know, I need to do this. Like the Red Lantern, she kind of goes, oh, I need to kind of punish these people, and I'm going to die if you take this, but I'm pretty much done, full of hate now. That was kind of touching. There was a Indigo, which is Hope. The person goes, if you take my ring, I'm going to turn back into an evil, you know, murderer. And the guy goes, it's the price that we need to pay for this war. And when this new god's leaving, he goes, here's a fair exchange, and gives him like a mystical, magical dagger. I'm like, holy shit, you just loosed an evil bastard on this world because you're trying to do what you think is right by stealing these rings to make this white light. I'm kind of wondering how they're going to do that without Kyle, because he was the White Ranger. He was the one that had the source, the only one that's been able to really do this. So it could be his coming back. Maybe he's only been dead for a year.
Maybe Zordon needs to step in.
But ultimately, damn it, I wasn't going to use ultimately at all today.
It's the second time you've used it. I've been counting.
It's going to be the last time, I don't promise.
Yeah.
Very, very, very good story. And I...
Fabulous?
I'm self-conscious about using fabulous right now. I'm definitely getting back into the Lantern books because of this. And it's funny that this is a whole different dynamic than just Superman fighting Cyborg or Doom or any of those other people. Like, it's godly.
I have two questions for you. Yes. One... this one you may or may not know. These different universes and the walls that are between them and blah, blah, blah. Is it, do you know if it's pre-New 52 or if it's current where, like, I don't remember which Superman, but it was like one of the Cyborg Supermans or like one of those literally punched through a wall of reality. I think that was pre-New 52.
That might have been pre. That's the one weird thing with the Green Lanterns and the Lantern books. When they kind of updated them to bring them into the New 52, they didn't retcon any of this stuff. They just kind of said, this stuff's been happening in the universe, where everything else, Batman, Superman, all of them got new backstories. They kind of said, we've been having this long run of the Lantern books. We're going to just kind of leave them as is and let the rest of the universe catch up. So,
okay.
So with this, they're kind of making up a little bit of new universal backstories of how the universe works, but each one of them has still been the same thing.
So this is more like old DC, where you just make up whatever you want and you say, well, that didn't happen.
Yeah, pretty much so.
Okay. Second question is more the composition of the book. With five writers, whatever it was, four artists, were there noticeable changes as far as both the writing of the story and the artwork of the story?
The artwork was just amazingly, like, there's some Geiger-looking, like, stuff, pages that just really pop out.
But, I mean, with that, those artists definitely have different styles. I mean, they might be similar enough to blend, but, I mean, was it enough to where you're flipping a page going, oh, here's a new artist, or did it make sense in the story?
Most all of it blended. There were a few pages where you could tell this is different than the one before. But then you're kind of looking at these pages, and then you get used to that art. Then it goes back to what you already saw, so then you kind of forgot that it transitioned back to something. And you can really tell the difference from when they're talking of the Lanterns compared to the New Gods on New Genesis or whatever. You see a distinct difference in the art and the coloring there a bit because of you had different people working on different parts of the book.
Now, with the different writers, though, I mean, did it seem like there were different voices talking?
No, that's the thing. Like,
that was seamless?
That's like, see, I read the book and then saw who all worked on it, and I'm like, that's a lot of fucking people, and it was concise. Okay. So that's the one thing that this book just flowed really well, and it's amazing that they had, and I'm guessing all those people that worked on it, though, are the writers of all the other Lantern books, so they probably had some say in what's going on, but ultimately, there was probably one person that actually wrote the script. Fuck you, Derek.
Ding. All right, cool. One more book here that I wanted to touch on, which I'm not going to go into full review on, is The Walking Dead number 132. From Image Comics, written by Robert Kirkman, art by Charlie Adlard. Stefano Gaudiano did inks, and Cliff Rathburn did gray tones on this. You know, I don't talk about this book much because this is one of those things that it's just so epic in tale and scope that it's hard to pick out a single issue that really stands out. This is one of them. Is it a good jumping on point? No. Is there a good jumping on point for this book ever outside of issue one? No. But sometimes you just either you go back and you start right at the number one with the trades and work your way back like you and I did, or you just grab on and you go along for the ride. This book, you know, it's things have jumped ahead a number of years after the all-out war thing. There's pretty much peace within these little villages. You know, you've got Hilltop and Rick's Village, whatever the hell it's called, and all this stuff. And this is a really good story in all. You see a lot of – you see people smiling in this issue.
Oh, that's weird.
Yeah. And it's kind of nice to see. You remember a while back when I did like the booze in a book and I said the zombies could talk?
Mm-hmm.
Well, they explained it. And in this one, not only can the zombies talk, the zombies can fight back with weapons.
Okay, so they're totally redoing everything. Well, I forget. The guy that's making the bullets, he kind of, when he explained, you know, there's different types of zombies. There's the zombies that just kind of are there until you go by them. Do you remember this?
Yeah.
And, like, then they'll attack. Or there's ones that just freely walk around and stuff. I thought that was a cool different take on zombies and being like, okay, I can see that. There's a few different classifications of zombieism.
This is great, though, Tony, because this is smart, because this goes way back to the beginning. Remember when Rick and... why can't I think of his name now? The kid that always went out and got stuff for them. What the hell's his name? I'm completely forgetting. Married Maggie had the kid.
Yeah, I know. Why can't I think of his name either?
Anyway, yeah. Got his brains bashed in and, mm-hmm. you know. But anyway, back then when they were trying to get into the city to get stuff and they chopped up a zombie and rubbed the shit all over themselves to cover themselves with mm-hmm. that stink. These aren't zombies. These are actually people.
Oh, okay. Well then.
And what they did, and actually you see it, like he kills one of these zombies that is attacking him.
His name Glenn?
Glenn. Thank you.
Okay.
God. And he looks at the back of this and there's stitching on the back of the neck of this zombie. And he flips him over and realizes somebody skinned a fucking zombie and is wearing their face as a mask.
That's creepy, but cool.
Yeah. Like, so there's a group. All of a sudden, we got another bad group of people that are wearing zombie skins as masks. And that's why they can walk among the walkers.
Okay. So, okay. I'm okay with that explanation then.
Yeah. So it was, you know, and I know I totally spoiled this and there's going to be some people that are a little bit upset because I'm talking Walking Dead and I still don't understand the moratorium on not talking about what happens in The Walking Dead. I mean, you got a few days to read it. But
because the new season's not out on TV yet.
Yeah, whatever.
Come on, everyone. That's where they get their source of Walking Dead from.
But, you know, so Kirkman has written just a fantastic story. He went back to some shit way back in the beginning that pretty much everybody forgot about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I did.
You know, that if you rub the zombie goo all over yourself, which why the fuck have people not been doing that? Yeah. Like, you know what? We got to take a trip. This is going to suck, but time to put the goo on.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
I mean, you have a bunch of dead zombies just laying outside your front gate anyways. Just pull a couple in and goop up.
Yeah. So that was kind of cool that he went back to that. But Charlie Adlard outdid himself on the art in this issue. I mean, a lot of times I get a little bit upset because there's just giant spreads for no reason. Like, I mean, but these, they were poignant. You know, I mean, like the one where it's like you kind of have like the family photo, everybody's sitting there enjoying the sunset together. I mean, it drew you into the story much more. And I think this is probably one of the best single issues of The Walking Dead that there's been in dozens of issues, you know. And so, I mean, if not even more. So just hats off and two mugs up to, you know, the team on this issue, because this one made me really glad that I didn't give up on single issues. And you know how close I was to going back to trades. This one made me happy.
Does it still, though, just kind of stop mid, like story, like you're thinking you're getting somewhere, and then it's just like, it's the last page. What the fuck?
Every issue.
I love it. That's genius. But at the same point, pisses me off more than anything on any other book. At least most books, you kind of know that it's wrapping up a bit, and then they're gonna have like a spoiler page of like next issue. That one, it just ends.
Well,
for no reason. Sometimes
The Walking Dead is the reality TV show of the comic books, where it's like, you know, whatever decision they're going to have to make, like, you know, like if it's a reality game show or something like that, and they're about to announce the winner, and we'll tell you after this message. Oh, you know, every fucking time.
It's weird that all of a sudden the commercials always coincide with right before they're going to tell the winner.
I know. It's like, what? Yeah. So that's kind of The Walking Dead. But all right, that wraps it up for Off the Shelf. We did actually, you know, we talked about a worst on tap, but we actually do have a best on tap this week.
Yeah, which it's been a while since we've done that.
Well, you know, we want them to be ones that really stick out. And on this one here, it's a Gary Brown cover, and this is for Edge of Spider-Verse number 4. And it's very, very old school, you know, once again, kind of more of those, of the creepy style or the really early Silver Age type comics. You know, Edge of Spider-Verse, I Walked with a Spider, you know, featuring Uncle Ted, the girl next door, spiders! Yeah, I really like it. It's a lot of reds and oranges and yellows and blacks mixed in there. But just really solid cover, a little bit scratchier style. It's also got, and I don't know what you call it, but it's got those little dots that make it look like the old.
Yeah, and I don't know, yeah. I mean, I think that's a new, well, it's not new technology, but like how they do it now just to make it look vintage.
Yeah.
It's kind of cool that they can do that, and it really makes your mind go back to the old ink things.
Yeah. Yep. So cool thing on that. We don't have a ton of time to get into this, but I did actually run across a bar back that I just wanted to mention.
Okay.
And I didn't even send you the info on it because it came in kind of last minute through one of our review writers. This is Psychosis, issue number 1 by Adam Atkinson. So if you look that up on Kickstarter, you'll see he had a $1,300 goal. He's already exceeded it. When this comes out, there's going to be 2 weeks left for it to go. So it's a guaranteed win. Like, you can go on there and you pledge, you're going to get it because you know it's going through. A lot of the bigger rewards, like original art, being drawn into the book, stuff like that, Those have already been taken up. Like, he got some good backers right away on here. But Psychosis, the little tagline is, it's a comic about change, sacrifice, and trying to survive each day as the world falls apart around you. It's basically, it's 100 years after civilization as we know it ends. There's, you know, things are in turmoil. There's some superhumans in it. You know, people just trying to get through. The rich are getting richer, the poor are getting poorer. And, you know, it's there's a resistance, you know, of people from like miners and farmers trying to take back what's theirs. And it's a really interesting synopsis on here. I have not got to read the book yet, but from what I've seen from the artwork and from what I've read of the idea, I'm curious about this one. So I think it's at least worth a look. So look up Psychosis issue 1 on Kickstarter and check it out. So, Tony, What do we got for some news this week?
Well, one of them that I'm excited about is the new Carnage book that's going to be debuting in about a month. And as I've said before, Carnage has been kind of coming out once, twice a year in little mini serials because of how psychotic he is. What, mini serials?
Mini serials. I was just thinking of those little boxes of cereal that you could get in the variety pack when we were kids.
Oh, yeah.
Mini cereals.
But this one is going with the whole Axis event. Mm-hmm. And with that, you have good guys being bad guys and bad guys being good guys. This is going to see Carnage in a new light as a superhero. So I've always loved reading his destruction and mayhem, but this is going to be a totally different book where he's actually helping out, and it's going to be weird to ever have read a Carnage book where you're rooting for it. Well, you kind of always root for him, but not in the same sense that you want to root for him. It's just mayhem and destruction, which is kind of cool.
What's the opposite of carnage? Like or, peace.
Yeah.
Okay. I was just trying to think because, you know, the opposite of Hulk apparently is Clue. So, you know. Anyway.
So I got that going for me.
Cool.
Which is good.
Well, when you pick that up, you know, if you want to write me a letter and send me a review of it, you can use some new Batman stamps.
Yes, and the Batman stamps look pretty dope.
They do. You know, it's 75th anniversary of Batman, you know, and so there's some stamps. What I like is that, you know, there's multiple different versions of Batman in here from, like, you know, the very original up to, you know, kind of the more current. But my favorite are the four stamps that are round that have, like, the original Batman logo on it.
Yeah, it's weird. Round stamps.
Yeah. Although, I don't know, like, with them being Forever stamps, are these Batman Forever stamps? Because that was not a good Batman. Like, I'm just wondering if they go, yeah, no, this stamp doesn't, it just doesn't cut it.
It's going to be returned to sender.
Yeah.
Batman Returns.
Yeah. So, I don't know. So, there's that. I want to make a dead, you know, Batman parents joke, but I haven't figured one out. So, you know, other than.
I'll mail you one of these on a dark night.
Wow. Just put a death certificate on that joke. Speaking of Batman and the fact that Batman's single, apparently some T-shirts out there decided that Batman shouldn't be single. Did you see this?
Yes, I did.
Yeah, so there are a couple T-shirts in particular that seem to piss off some fans, and I would say rightly so. There was one, it's kind of like, and this was a girl's shirt, and it had the Batman Batman symbol in there, and it said, training to be Batman's wife. And then there was another one that has Superman kind of bending over and kissing Wonder Woman. It says, score, Superman does it again. These are a little sexist, I'm not going to lie. You know,
yeah.
It's like, I mean, normally I can be oblivious to a lot of things because I'm just like, eh, whatever. But even I saw these and went, wow, really? You know, normally it's like people are like, oh, this is terrible. And I'm like, yeah, whatever. You know, it's not that bad. These, now, the one thing I'll say, the turning to be Batman's wife, that shirt would be fine if you took the apostrophe S and wife off of it. If it just said training to be Batman, that'd be a kick-ass shirt for a chick.
Yeah.
That'd be a kick-ass shirt. You know, but I don't know how you fix the T-shirt of score. You know, Superman slips one in her again. You know, apparently roofies work on Wonder Woman. I mean, because it just, oh. So anyway, DC responded to this. And I'm going to read the message that they sent out. And it said, DC Comics is home to many of the greatest male and female superheroes in the world. All our fans are incredibly important to us, and we understand that the messages on certain T-shirts are offensive. We agree. Our company is committed to empowering boys and girls, men and women, through our characters and stories. Accordingly, we are taking a look at our licensing and product design process to ensure that all our consumer products reflect our core values and philosophy. So, thank you, DC, for listening to, you know, the fans and saying that this is not appropriate. And, you know, I just hope that, you know, congratulations to them for fixing a problem.
But the problem's still going to happen elsewhere. They can't monitor all that.
Well, apparently, you know, really they should. I mean, if you're listening to this. Well,
I should, but, I mean, there's a lot of places that, you know, how they'd have to, well, I mean, they could. It's just, will they?
Yeah. So,
I mean, Lyft service is one thing. Whether they actually do it is another.
Yeah, but, I mean, they have to approve everything before it's done. I mean, they weren't going to let that statue with the little boy with the Superman logo on his chest be made. Yeah, that's true. You know. So, I mean, they're obviously approving everything. So, yeah. You know. But congratulations for doing the right thing and addressing this. And then hopefully DC and the rest of the companies out there will think twice about doing things like this. Was it funny? Yeah. Was it appropriate? No.
Mm-hmm.
You know, at least the Superman one. But the Batman's wife was not even funny. It, you know, but anyway.
Did you ever see that amazing movie, Battleship?
No.
It was so, so, so terrible.
You know, I wanted to, but the problem was it just didn't seem to, like, stack up into all, like, the little time slots and blocks that I had available.
It was not. I actually watched it, and I don't know why.
It might as well have been in Russian. I wasn't going to.
I mean, it was alien. Like, they totally made it aliens, and, like, the little peg things that you'd put in the things were, like, bombs. So, like, when they fell on top of the aircraft carrier.
Just stop talking. I'm like, don't care.
Oh, I see how they got the name Battleship, but why? That's so dumb.
Yeah.
You know what I can't also think of making a movie ever of? Tetris.
Yeah.
Battleship, for as terrible as it was, I could actually see them making a movie of battleships fighting aliens. What the fuck is Tetris going to be?
I don't know, but I did hear a rumor that there's going to be that they're going to have a little, like, that they're going to have like a little bit of competition in the market at the same time. And while it's not a video game, it's a home game because Jenga's coming out at the same time. Wait, that's a lie. It's not happening. But yeah, I don't know. What the fuck? Seriously, that's like having like Rubik's Cube, the movie.
Yeah.
I
have no clue how this could be ever made into a movie. Like, I give, like, my fucking nephew a typewriter, and he'd come up with better shit than this. Like,
I bet it'll be a love story.
Connect the pieces to my heart.
I don't know. So, I mean, seriously, but, like,
I thought this was a joke when I heard about it, and I checked the date, and no, it's not April Fool's. Like,
the climax of the movie is when you're going to get that one long four-piece thing that you can just slide down in, and it's going to set everything off.
That's right. Probably going to be the climax of the movie.
It's
just that they're saying it's going to be a very big, epic sci-fi movie. Unless they're fucking invading aliens again, which is, if that's what they go for, that ride along in these things.
Maybe space invaders will come in and start like dropping bombs too, you know, and then caterpillar, or no, wait, not caterpillar,
centipede,
yeah, caterpillar. So, speaking of movies, this one's kind of fun. We don't have to dwell on it, but there's been for the last couple weeks, I've been hearing about it a lot. That Stan Lee, there was a fan like myth going around that Stan Lee is actually playing the Watcher in all the Marvel movies because he's always in them. You know, he shows up as cameos in all these movies. And they're like, you know, even though the Watcher's got a giant head and stuff like this, Stan Lee is the Watcher disguising himself as a human. And he's always there because he's witnessing all these things and blah, 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 blah.
But he's not witnessing all the, like, super events. He's just in the movie.
You just see that he's there so that it gives the impression that he's always around so he can always be seeing things. Now,
this was the dumbest theory that I've ever heard, though.
I don't know. I think it was fun. But Stan Lee did actually say at a recent comic convention that he is actually not. It was at Elmo City Comic Con that he said, no, I'm not actually the Watcher. you know.
You know what would be great, though, is if in the new Fantastic Four movie they show the Watcher and it's Stan Lee's voice or something. Like, so he goes, ah, fooled you.
Or better yet, it's just Stan Lee and he goes, I'm the Watcher. So, another just quick movie note. I Am Legend is getting a reboot, and it looks like they're going to make a trilogy out of it.
Like, yes, the movie didn't end the way the book did, which pissed off a lot of fans of the comic, which it okay, reboot already? Like, fuck, man, we still got the 80s and 90s to still do reboots. Like, we don't need to be rebooting every single fucking movie that just came out in the last 10 years.
Yeah, well, hey, apparently they're completely out of ideas. So, speaking of ideas, we talked about Rub and Smell, the Harley mm-hmm. Quinn not Scratch and Sniff comic, because Scratch and Sniff is trademarked.
Mm-hmm.
But the Rub and Smell, and there were four things, four scents. There was suntan, lotion, leather, and pizza, and then a mystery compound, which we talked about how overseas it was going to be fresh-cut grass, and I made the joke, well, if it's grass, it must be weed. Apparently, it sounded like it's going to be weed. So I was joking, but
we now know DC listens to our podcast. They're like, that's a good idea.
Yeah. Well, this was from Smell the Truth.
That's their title of their webpage?
Well, wait. Actually, what is this? It's blog.sfgate.com, Smell the Truth, which is coverage of medical marijuana news and cannabis industries. Oh, okay. So they're saying that this this.
So you're gonna believe the stoners on this?
We believe what Jade and Elegant Weapon has to say.
True.
But this has that secret compound is, quote, what's referred to in the story as cannabis loceb 7-A. Cannabis loceb. I don't know, some fucking big ass word.
Okay. Yeah.
So yeah, weed. I'm right. What else did you have out there, Tone?
I don't really have much.
Okay, I got I got three more quick things. The first is Mike Mignola is returning to Dark Horse with a Frankenstein book, which it's going to be slated for release. It's going to be a 5-issue mini coming out in 2015, and it's going to be called Frankenstein Underground. Sounds really cool. It sounds like it's going to fit into the Hellboy and the BPRD universe.
Okay.
So, and from what I've read, it's that he's trying to blend the original Mary Shelley as well as the, like, the old, what was it? The Universal, like Boris Karloff, like worlds together. So that should be pretty cool. Keep an eye out for that. This one's just kind of interesting, and I wish we had more time to talk about it. Tom and Jerry cartoons on Amazon and iTunes have had a racism warning added to their shows, where it, from the sounds of it, it sounds like Warner Brothers is the one that put it on there themselves. And basically it's just saying that there's a quote on here that Tom and Jerry shorts may depict some racial and ethnic prejudices that were once commonplace in American society. Such depictions were wrong then and are wrong today. While not representing the Warner Brothers' view of today's society, these cartoons are being presented as they were originally created, because to do otherwise would be the same thing as claiming that these prejudices never existed.
Yeah, that's what I read before when I was hearing that they were doing the same thing with the old Looney Tunes ones and, yeah, like the stereotypes of...
Well, it's all Warner Brothers, so it would make, yeah, sense.
And I just thought that was just probably the... not say the greatest thing, but yeah, don't censor what was. I mean, obviously not everything needs to be PC nowadays. It is what it was.
Mm-hmm.
And to change it, as they said, would be trying to rewrite history.
Yeah.
And I give them, yeah, way thumbs up on,
I'm glad that they didn't edit it out. You know, mm-hmm. Disney could actually take a little cue from them and maybe re-release the Song of the South. To show, because from an artistic side, as far as how they blended live action with animation in that was very groundbreaking and beautifully done.
I know, I've heard so many things about that movie. I've never seen it, and I never will.
Okay, I'm 10 years older than you. They used to show that to us at school. And we're talking, you know, this would have been still in the 80s.
Okay.
Now, granted, I grew up in a farm town that maybe they're a little bit behind the times. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so I mean, like, even in the 80s, they'd show this because, hey, you know what? It's a kid's movie. But anyway, last thing, if you're going to New York Comic Con, there is a fundraising thing going on through Image Comics, and it's going to be Friday, October 10th at the Stitch Bar and Lounge located at 247 West 37th Street, which is only 3 blocks from the Javits Center where the con's going on. $10 gets you in. There's going to be a shit ton of creators there that you're going to want to go rub elbows with and have a drink with. The bonus is that all proceeds are going to the Hero Initiative. I really wish that we were going because this is our kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're going, please go check it out. It's a great cause. Awesome people. 21 over. Honestly, that's it. Tony, you want to do Booze in a Book, and then I'll wrap it up quickly with Indy?
Yes. Booze in a Book. Picked up Guardians 3000, number one, and it being the original Guardians of the Galaxy, I was like, I'll give it a try, but I'm like, I don't need to pick up so many new books. However, it was mind-blowing because it has the one thing that I love more than time itself is time travel. And with that, how they made the story so well, and I'm not even going to get into the story, it resets within the story. And it made me start thinking of the first time we ever did Booze in a Book. And couldn't find what our first booze was to pair this with. And hopefully our podcast historian, your cousin Jason, might know. That's going to be his new title now because he's listened to all of ours recently. I'm going to go back to my first drink ever, which is quite simple. Bacardi O and Sobe Energy Citrus.
So both Guardians of the Galaxy 3000 and this drink sound like neither things I would enjoy.
But once you have them, it's so tasty. Just tasting the book is just...
Tony, you're not supposed to lick your book. It's not a lick and read. All right. This one, sad your brother's not here for Indy Turnpike. Oh, I'm sorry, by the way. Booze in a Book, brought to you by InkWhiskey.com. Go check them out online. Fantastic NES cartridge retro flasks. $20, and they're awesome. God, I haven't used mine this weekend because I didn't go out last night. But I love going out, like when we were at Oktoberfest, and you just kind of pull that flask out, and people are like, why is that guy got a Nintendo cartridge? And then they see you drink out of it, and they're like, what the hell is that? So, yeah, go get one. Indy Turnpike, Brides of Helheim, number one. Did you see this one, Tone?
No.
Okay. So, did you read Helheim? I know your brother and
my brother has. I didn't really get into it.
Written by Cullen Bunn, so second book for him today. Illustrated by Joel Jones, colors by Nick Filardi, and letters by Crank. And this one picks up a number of years after the original Helheim, where you had the one Viking guy that became a Draugr. He basically became a undead warrior. And this one, you don't have to have read the first one, but I'm not going to get too much into detail in the story. This has witches and sorcery and the undead and Vikings. Cullen Bunn has woven another beautiful tale, which Joelle Jones really brought to life with her art. Highly recommend picking up this book if you want something that is completely unrealistic, that seems realistic because of the creative team.
Okay. I kind of follow you.
Yeah. Something that you should never believe, but you have a hard time going, this is only fantasy, because it's so fucking well done.
Are they caught in the landslide? No escape from reality?
What?
So this is just fantasy. Quoting Bohemian Rhapsody.
Oh.
Get with the times, Derek.
That was not, that's not current times. So, last call, Tony?
Well, we kind of covered the Edge of Spider-Verse with Best on Tap. My brother's got half my books that I haven't gotten to read. God is Dead is still good, and he's still dead. That's about it right now.
Okay. I have a shit ton, and I'm only listing off the ones that were really good because I didn't even bring all the other books with me. Little Depressed Boy, back out again. That was a great one. Burn the Orphanage, number 5 of 5. So two Cena Grace books that I needed to mention. I really wanted to talk about Burn the Orphanage this week, but I couldn't figure out a way to do it without spoiling the story. So I will say, go buy this book. This is one of the most fun rides you'll ever have in comics, and get all 5 issues. But Burn the Orphanage, Reign of Terror. The Fade Out, number 2. I talked about that last month when issue 1 came out. Mm-hmm. Awesome. Because you know how number 2 issues can be a letdown? Yeah. No, this one kicks ass. You know what else was awesome as a number 2? God Hates Astronauts. Awesome. And I actually whipped out the shitty 3D glasses and so that I could see 3D Cowboy. Actually is in 3D.
Oh, really?
Yeah. But it was interesting because Ryan Brown, writer-artist on this, he goes, did it work? Because not all glasses are fully functional. Mm-hmm. And it worked on the first page, but in the other couple appearances, it didn't work so well. But it was definitely...
It's still cool that it worked at least one.
Well, and these are really shitty glasses. Like, I mean, the shittiest. The Drawing of 3, number 3 of 5. Fearless Dawn had another one-shot come out. This one, we're going to...
I thought you were just going to talk about the few that were good when you were...
These are just these are the good ones. I left the other ones at home. Death of Wolverine, we're going to have to talk about when this one wraps up.
Yeah, my brother almost made it today, and he was going to review that, but life happens.
Another awesome number 2, Cloaks. Remember I talked about that mm-hmm. one? And then, yeah, I guess I'll just wrap it up there. So there were some other ones, but those were the best ones, and a fucking amazing week in comics. All right, so follow us on Twitter, Drunk on Comics. Mm-hmm. Find us on Facebook, /Drunk on Comics. I've been told we have an Instagram.
With 1-2 pictures.
Yeah, and hey guys, if you've listened this long, you obviously don't hate us. So please do us a favor. If you're listening on iTunes or Stitcher, please go leave us a review. It helps us more than you know. Tell your friends. You know, share the love of our belligerent asses. And, yeah, I guess that's pretty much it.
Let's go do some polka.
Do some polka?
Pulaski.
No, you just want some more Polish wieners.
You bet your dupa I do.
Oh, you know. So, okay, this, I don't care. I have to say this before we stop. So, before Oktoberfest, I was talking to one of our friends, and... We were discussing, like, you know, because we were setting up to go. Well, you know me and puns, and of course she made the comment about how, where was it? Well, we were talking about Oktoberfest. She's like, it's gonna be the worst, WRST,
mm-hmm.
and then she goes. And then she asked a question. She goes, I have to ask just in casing, like sausage casing.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, careful, don't polka the bear. she's like, I'm going to tell my oompa-pa if you make any threats. I'm like, don't be a brat. You know? It went on. So that was worthless. Nobody cares. All right, guys, keep reading your comics. We'll be back next week to talk to you more about them then. We'll see you.